Hey, I'm Steve Conte, and you're listening to Life Minute.
Renowned guitarist, singer, songwriter Steve Conte has been in the New York music scene a long time, from his gig as the lead guitarist for the Reform New York Dolls to collabs with everyone from Eric Burdon of the Animals to Billy Squire, even a stint as Paul Simon's rehearsal vocalist. He gained global acclaim through his work with Japanese composer and artist Yoko Kanno, doing soundtracks for anime series, and now he's just released his second solo album, The Concrete Jangle, 10 tracks of what he describes as 60s meets 80s power pops about life. Conte plays a multitude of guitars and other instruments and brings a bunch of his famous music friends in on the action too, like Ecstasy's Andy Partridge, who co-wrote and produced the record, Marshall Crenshaw, Ultravox's Steve Lillywhite, Sex Pistols' Glenn Matlock, Mott the Hoople's Ian Hunter, Sopranos actor Michael Imperioli, even his brother and two sons sing backing vocals. This latest project is clearly a labor of love. This is a Life Minute with Steve Conte.
All right, so 10-track new album, The Concrete Jangle.
Thank you for getting it right. Some people just assume that it's The Concrete Jungle. You
know? No, never assume, right?
But it's a play on it because it's a jangly sort of pop, power pop, rock and soul record with a little bit of psychedelia in it. Get to show my Beatles side, which has been in my blood since I started writing songs at 10 years old.
And 10 tracks, and five of them, you had some help, right?
Yes, I had some help with my hero, Andy Partridge of XTC, who is a genius songwriter. He's up there with, you know, my top 10. You know, Lennon McCartney, Jagger and Richards, Townsend, and, you know, Andy's right up there with them.
Wow.
So it was amazing getting to work with him.
How did that come to be? Have you been friends?
We had some mutual friends. I had a guitar maker who built him a guitar as well, and so that guitar maker gave him one of my records and he really liked it.
Aww.
And then I became friends with Steve Lillywhite, who's a big producer. He produced quite a few XTC records, also produced Stones, U2, Dave Matthews. And one day Steve and I were chatting on Twitter and the subject of XTC came up, and he said, oh, you know, Andy's on Twitter, we should bring him into this conversation. And next thing I know, Andy is tweeting with me. I was going through his town on tour, Swindon, England. And he said, I hear that you're coming to my town. I'll buy you lunch. I was like, oh, but I tell you why. Because he said, you stole my dream gig. Guitar player in the New York Dolls.
Oh, wow.
So apparently he wanted to be in the New York Dolls when he was a youngster. And I had no idea about that.
So, yeah, he was probably a fan of you, too, while you were a fan of him.
We never spoke about the Dolls records that I did. I did four of them, but he was a fan of the early Dolls, you know, the early 70s, when I was just a little tyke.
All right, so 10 tracks. Tell us about your five tracks.
The tracks that I wrote without Andy?
Yeah.
Well, I really had to up my game because, you know, writing with one of the greatest songwriters, living songwriters, I really honestly believe that. I had to bring my A game. So I picked some of my more melodious, Beatle-y kind of things that would go along with the five songs that Andy and I wrote. And actually, when I played them for Andy, I played Andy the whole record, and he went, hey, I really like that song, Decomposing a Song for You, one of my titles. And he said, how come I never heard that? I said, well, it was already done. I didn't bring it to him because when we started writing, we wrote everything on Zoom. So, because he was in England, I was in the Bronx, I would go to the Zoom session with at least two or three ideas. You know, so we didn't want to just be sitting there on the computer. Well, what do you want to do? Yeah, I brought a bunch of ideas, and he had a bunch of ideas, and we combined them. But the five songs I wrote without him, I think stand up pretty good.
And you play a lot of instruments on it too, right? Not just the guitar.
Yeah, I play guitar. I play mandolin. I play keyboards. I play some pianos. B3 organs, some mellotrons, some strings. I mean, it's amazing what you can do with digital recording equipment. I mean, it's a very analog sounding record. I mean, it sounds like it could have been made in 1973, you know? But because there's a lot of samples of great old instruments. You know, there's mellotron was this crazy instrument with tapes. It had like little loops of tape. And, you know, it's on Beatle records, it's on Stones, Led Zeppelin. But the thing was like a giant behemoth that was very cranky and you couldn't really take it on the road. So when they did all the samples, I mean, they sound amazing and just like the real thing, but it's on a hard drive, you know? So, and you know, I'm not a real keyboard player, so I could like do it and make mistakes and then fix it. And, yeah. But I had some proper keyboard players to play with me. My friends, Rob Schwimmer, who played with Simon and Garfunkel and tons of other people. Andrew Hollander, who co-produced the album with me. Mark Stewart on cello. Chris Anderson on trumpet. And I think pretty much all the vocals are me, except I have my latest single called We Like It, where I have about 60 singers on it.
Yes, I saw that.
Including Ian Hunter and Marshall Crenshaw and Danko Jones and Glenn Matlock from the Sex Pistols and
Michael Imperioli
from the Sopranos, of course. And, I just basically, you know, went through my phone book, you know, and I said, what can I get? You know, because the song, it's about a politician making all these crazy promises to people. And I wanted like all kinds of different people. He makes these outlandish promises like, I'll give you a tap in the kitchen that turns on the beer. And, you know, I'll give you wads of cash. And, you know, so I wanted like every kind of person represented. I wanted actors, musicians, regular working people, kids, women, men, all ethnicities. I just went through my book and I said, who would be good for this? And, you know, I got 60 people.
You did good.
Which is quite a lot. And I'm doing a video now. And quite a few of those people sent me clips for the video as well.
Awesome.
So
that's great.
Yeah.
And what about the two videos that you have out now?
So I have Girl With No Name, which is one of my songs. We filmed it right in Times Square, a lot of it. And then I have this company, these guys in England, that or Scotland rather, that do all these crazy post-production graphics, digital stuff, and it's amazing. So I give them the film and then they do their magic on it and put lyrics to it, and it's, you know, floating across the screen. It's really cool. And then the first one, 4th of July, was one of the Andy Partridge co-writes, and that was done with the same team of guys. Modern technology, you can film this stuff on green screen and then put yourself anywhere you want.
Yeah.
You know?
Yeah.
And that was a lot of that was necessary during COVID too, because I couldn't get in a room with people. So videos I made for my last album were the same kind of thing, virtual stuff.
What drives you creatively?
Music. I'm one of those guys where I'm a singer, I'm a songwriter, and I'm a musician. I mean, a lot of people are one or the other. I foolishly tried to master all three of those things. Songwriting, you know, each one is a whole lifetime's worth of work. I set my goals high early on. So, you know, I wanted to be songwriter like Lennon and McCartney. I wanted to be a singer like Paul Rogers or Rod Stewart. I wanted to be a guitar player like Jeff Beck or Jimi Hendrix. I came in somewhere, you know, in between all that. So, not too many lead singer, lead guitar player songwriters that I can think of out there. Mark Knopfler, Jimi Hendrix, Eric Clapton. I don't really know who else.
So you always knew you wanted to do this?
Yes.
From a young age? How old were you?
I heard the Beatles' Revolver when I was 6, and I was just fascinated. But I wanted to be a drummer, so I was a drummer first.
Wow. Oh, boy.
I wanted to be Ringo. My brother was a guitar player, and within a couple of years, I think, I was about 11, I picked up his guitar, and I just discovered I could write songs, not even knowing what I was doing. So I said, I better switch. And then I became really good on guitar, and he switched to bass. And the two of us, he plays in my whole record, John, my brother John. Yeah, he's an amazing bass player. Our first album we recorded in the family living room when I was 11, he was 10. We both played drums and guitar. We switched off. We wrote all the songs. And I designed all the album covers. I would draw the cover art. And
that's so cute.
Lifelong obsession.
Did you ever have lessons?
Then. Guitar lessons? Mm-hmm. Yeah, we both took guitar lessons from the same person. But in the beginning, it was like, you know, reading the little, you know, Mary Had a Little Lamb out of the book. Really boring. And then one day I learned Johnny Be Good, the solo from Chuck Berry, and that was it. I never went back to another, you know, lesson out of a book again. And then 20 years later, I actually got to play with Chuck Berry.
Wow.
A whole night.
Really?
A whole night of music, yeah.
Oh, wow.
90 minutes on stage with Chuck.
Oh, my God. That was so amazing. And your mom's a musician too, right?
My mom's a jazz singer, yes. So, Rosemary County.
Yeah. Right. So how did she feel about you guys going into this?
Oh, well, She used to talk about have something to fall back on, but I said, but you didn't, Mom, because, you know, she raised four kids, you know, a single parent with a, you know, a singing job. So I thought, well, it's doable, right? I don't have any kids. I can go get out there and do this. So I never gave it a second thought, really. My father wanted to, you know, get a government. He worked for the post office. He was like, get a government job. I went and took the test one day, and I think I was out till 5 a.m. partying, and went to take the test at 7, and all they offered me was a job as a mailbag repairman in Clark, New Jersey. I said, no thanks. I'll stick to guitar.
There you go. And then how did you end up with the, like, what happened from there?
Oh,
into the New York Dolls.
Between ages 10 and when I came to the city, I played with a ton of bands. I toured, you know, through the 80s and 90s. I had my own band, Company of Wolves. We were signed to Mercury Records with, you know, an original band of my songs and co-written with the singer, Keith. I toured with Blood, Sweat, and Tears, the jazz rock band. I worked with all kinds of people, Billy Squire, Paul Simon. That was a crazy gig. I was Paul Simon's stunt vocalist for rehearsals when Paul didn't want to sing. It was me. Willie DeVille is another one from Mink DeVille. And then right after I played with Willie, I got the call from David Johansen saying, I'm putting the Dolls back together for one show. Do you want to do this? He said, hey, I got your name from, I asked a couple people. And they all said, don't call anyone else, call Conti. So we met, we had lunch, and didn't even play a note of music, and he gave me the gig.
That's something. What was that like?
The first gig, we played Royal Festival Hall in London, and it was Chrissy Hynde and Bob Geldof and Shane McGowan and Mick Jones from The Clash, and everybody was like knocking on the dressing room door, just fawning over us, you know, and yeah, I didn't know what to expect, you know. They were like, you really, you know, filled Johnny Thunders' shoes. And, I mean, I wasn't a Johnny Thunders fan. He's the original guitar player from the Dolls that died. But I guess, you know, I have the Italian nose, hair, and not nose hair, but nose and hair. And I guess it looked right. And I had used similar guitars and amps to him and kind of play hard if I have to. So it worked. Worked well.
That's interesting that you weren't a fan. But,
huh. Yeah. I mean, Johnny Thunders was a combination of Chuck Berry and Keith Richards, who were two of my favorites too. And then I got into a lot of like jazzier guys. I got into Wes Montgomery and John Scofield and all, you know, Jeff Beck and John McLaughlin and all these, you know, kind of crazy jazz fusion. And, you know, I went to school and I studied with, you know, real jazz pros. And but then, you know, when you get out and you get back into the real world, you know, I've always loved writing songs and singing and having my hair long. And, yeah. You know, so I wasn't going to put a suit on and go play jazz. But it's a commitment to jazz, you know. You know, I went back to listening to what I grew up loving. Beatles, blues. Jay Giles' band was one of my favorites growing up, too. So I went back to all that early, really simple stuff and just kind of peeled back all the education that I got, you know?
Mm-hmm. Yeah, you sure got a lot. Very eclectic. Have you ever met a Beatle?
I have not. I've never met everybody a Beatle but a Beatle. Or a Stone.
Really?
Oh, nope.
I'm gonna make that happen.
I know. Almost met Ringo once. Ringo was in the studio when we were recording our Company Wolves album in Los Angeles. The producer played him one of the songs, and Ringo said Ringo liked it. But we were in the hotel sleeping. I said, "Why didn't you call me up? I would have woke up and come down there to meet Ringo." But didn't happen.
Anything else you want to tell us about the album that you feel like we didn't say enough?
It was recorded. The album was recorded here in New York at Little Stevens Studio. So I'm on Little Stevens record label, Wicked Cool Records. Great label and a great family of artists and people to be around and working with. So I recorded the album at Stevens Studio. I had some great drummers on the album too. Prairie Prince from the Tubes and XTC, Skylarking album. He flew in and played drums on more than half the album. Tommy Price, who was in Joan Jett and Billy Idol and Mick DeVille, is on a couple of tracks. And Brian Delaney, who was in The Dolls with me, was on one track. I think it's my best album ever.
Really?
It's my favorite. Not just because of writing with Andy, but because that elevated my writing too.
Right, so
I had to rise to the occasion.
Yeah, that's so cool. And are you touring it at all?
I'm working on a record release party for June. And then some dates around here, Long Island and Woodstock. But a real tour, not yet. I'm looking at getting a new booking agent, and hopefully that'll happen. Okay.
What was the first record you ever bought?
First record I ever bought with my own money, you mean?
Yes.
I think it was J. Geil's Bloodshot, which was on see-through red vinyl. I still have it. I still have every vinyl I ever bought. It was either that one or it was Chuck Berry's Golden Decade. Mm-hmm. So
it doesn't have to be with your own money. What a money to me. Did you you stole from the kid down the street? Your mom's money?
Yeah, I mean, I got records as gifts. You know, for my 9th birthday, I got Beatles 65, and I got The Stones Through the Past Darkly. So I had Beatles and Stones. You know, people always said, kind of the generation before me, you could either be a Beatles fan or a Stones fan. You couldn't be both. But I never knew that there was a problem with being both, so I was. I liked the dirty blues of the Stones, and I liked the melody of the Beatles. So, and it all started on my 9th birthday with those two records.
That's so cool. What does music do for people?
It helps them forget problems, for sure. Or, I know for myself, I would sometimes go deeper into my emotions. If I was feeling sad, I would put on some sad music and it would just kind of bring it all out, and then I could be done with it. Mm-hmm. You know? Yeah, music is, it's weird. These days, music has become almost, you know, people don't buy it like they used to. Everyone streams it. So buying albums is not like it was when I was a kid, where you would get it and you'd open it up and read all the liner notes and everything. Kids just, they have an MP3, and it's just a little thing on your computer, and you don't know who wrote it, you don't know who sings on it, you don't know where it was recorded. That's why I still like vinyl.
Yeah, me too. I know, it's just the whole experience. Yeah. So I'm glad
you're turning that record over, you know?
Yeah.
Flipping it over. And we used to have the record player that had a big thing that came up, spindle, and you could put like 5 LPs, you know, and then they drop. Yes. when the arm would go across, and next LP would drop.
Yeah. A New York City guy, what's your favorite thing to do in the city when you're not working?
My favorite thing to do when I'm not working, hanging with my kids. My two boys are both into singing, acting, musical theater, art, graphic art, you know, they're artists. But their mom is a teacher, and so they get the brains from her and the musical talent from me.
Awesome.
So hopefully they'll make better decisions than I made in my life.
What would your current self tell your younger self on that note?
Don't worry about it, man. You got it, you know? Because, you know, when you're at that awkward age growing up, you're like kind of comparing yourself with other people, and like, am I as good as that guy? But, and you know, I kind of know where I am these days, you know? If I don't know by now, I'll never know, right?
What's your favorite comfort food?
Italian, of course.
I'm 100% Italian, by the way.
Me too.
Don't let butler.
Me too.
Awesome. What's your favorite cocktail?
My favorite cocktail. Either a dirty martini or... Yeah, I'm just going to go with dirty martini. But I like tequila on the rocks as well.
I like it.
To see more of this interview, visit our website, lifeminute.tv. And don't forget to subscribe to our podcast, Life Minute TV.